That makes sense.
I'll talk. Need action. Maybe make some?
Jack glanced at Ryan, who was about to answer, when the door to the dormitory swung open, and Murphy stood in the doorway, flanked by two sec men. He had obviously learned a lesson from Panner's death, as both sec men had their blasters trained on the prisoners. He pointed to Mildred.
You're next.
Me?
Come on, baby. Time to answer a few questions. If you answer them right, then you may get a reward.
Murphy leered at Mildred, and the two sec men flanking him broke their impassive stares to smile cruelly. The black woman stood without a word and walked out of the room between the two sec men.
You all just be good now.
Mildred was tied to the cane chair, just as Ryan had been. Murphy stood on the edge of the pool of light, partly shrouded by shadow.
So what comes next?
Despite her efforts to quell the uneasiness in her and keep the fear at bay, it crept up on the corners of Mildred's mind. Such had been the strength of her dream state under the trank darts that she almost believed Murphy was wearing a clan hood in the shadows.
It's quite simple. We want to know all about you and your friends, particularly the old fart.
You'll have to ask him about that. I don't know squat about him. And what could there be about a black bitch to interest you?
Murphy stepped forward into the light. Despite herself, Mildred flinched.
Oh, I love it. The geeks in R&D are gonna love the way their gadgets worked. Don't worry. I ain't gonna violate you as part of the interrogation. We don't know enough about how rad-blasted your genes are to risk that. But I always say that there ain't nothing that works like good old-fashioned pain.
With a backhand slap, he jerked Mildred's head back, the rings on his fingers ripping her flesh. She kept her head back to one side, breathing heavily, and trying to conquer the sudden flash of pain and anger. Gently, Murphy took her chin in his fingers and pulled her head around until he was looking her in the eye.
Now, when I had you stripped, we found medical supplies in your pockets. I'd swear that you were a medic of some kind. Is that so?
You're a clever mother, aren't you?
Thought so. That being the case, you won't want those hands of yours damaged in any way, will you? Like losing those nails, for instance.
Mildred's stomach lurched. She remembered a book she'd read when she was in college, a history of the French resistance in World War II. There had been a chapter on Odette, the spy dropped by British intelligence who'd been captured by the Gestapo. Part of the torture she endured was to have her fingernails and toenails pulled out by pliers, each one wrenched out by the root, so that the exposed nail bed would remain uncovered. It was, in many ways, such a small thing to do. Yet the pain had been almost unendurable, leaving her unable to walk or use her hands properly for months. If this happened to Mildred, not only would it be more pain than she could stand in her current psychological condition, but it would also be a great obstacle to her in any escape attempt. Fighting the conditioning, she figured that this was the equivalent of using Dean against his father. What could she lose by telling them about herself at this stage?
Well?
Okay, I'll tell you what you want to know, although you may not believe it.
It went as Murphy would have expected. A little pain, the promise of more, and they crumbled. He had to hand it to R&D. The short-term effects of their machines were damn good. Even the Mutie woman had given in pretty easily. He hadn't expected it, but had guessed the way to get at her when he mentioned the one-eyed man and noticed how her hair coiled tight around her neck and head. Damn giveaway, those Mutie traits. The albino hadn't been so easy. He was taciturn and as stubborn as hell. When Murphy first leaned over him to threaten him, the insolent little fart had spat in his face. By the time Murphy had finished with him, the albino's hair was running red with blood, and he had a few more scars on his face to match those that already crisscrossed his pale skin, now hidden beneath red wheals and livid scabs. And still, he'd gotten nothing from him, not even his name. That was okay, he knew that from the others. The only one he hadn't questioned had been the old man. For reasons best known to himself, the gen had wanted to do that in his office. All they had was a name, Doc Tanner. It didn't seem much, but when Murphy made his report, Wallace had been excited. The gen had a plan that he didn't want anyone else to know about yet. That was plain to Murphy, as he and the two SecMen assigned to the prisoners escorted Doc Tanner to the gen's office. Murphy studied the old man. His eyes, set in a wrinkled and tired face, framed by his flowing white hair, seemed to glitter with the same mixture of cunning and madness as Wallace. The thought of the two of them in the same room made Murphy shudder, and he was glad when the gen ordered him to stay outside. The corridor was almost deserted. The maintenance tasks were completed, and the whole redoubt was still on yellow alert, with everyone at their designated posts. Murphy was pleased, as it gave him a more than reasonable excuse to dismiss his sec men, dispatching them back to their posts, and stand guard himself. In the empty corridor, Murphy was able to stand guard and also eavesdrop, thankful that Wallace was inclined to raise his voice when excited. And boy, was he excited. Wallace flicked through Murphy's report as Doc Tanner was left alone with him, standing in the middle of the room with a distracted air as the sec man left.
Sit down, Doctor.
Why, I don't mind if I do. I would assume that there is some particular reason why you wish to interview me yourself, and outside the confines of the hellhole in which my companions have been interrogated.
Oh, yes, Dr. Tanner. I couldn't risk you being harmed. Not before recycling.
Doc shuddered. There was something about the way Wallace looked at him as he said it that made a lizard crawl slowly and coldly down his spine. The gen looked down at the report, then picked up a sheaf of paper.
There are things about our lives here that only I am aware of, Doctor. We are the only true Americans left, you know.
I can think of some native tribes, remnants of whom survive, who would argue that point. But I am interrupting you. Pray continue.
In this base, we have managed to keep the traditions of the U.S. Army flying high, like the stars and stripes. We have maintained the American way against the scum outsiders. We were entrusted by our forefathers to keep the research pure, and to maintain the mechanism that this base was created for. Thanks to the Great Plan, we still have access to many pre-Skydark records.
I am surprised that you use such terms, as cut off as you are.
We sometimes have contact with outsider scum in an attempt to keep our gene pool healthy, and thus we have a tendency to pick up some of their slack speech habits. It's regrettable, but inevitable. And please refrain from interrupting me.
My apologies.
Very well. As I was about to say, we have records of before the Great War between the Reds and the Democrats. It is unfortunate that, as time progresses, we find ourselves moving further and further away from the technology of the pre-Skydark era. The good book says recycle, but sometimes there aren't things to recycle with. We improvise, but that is all.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the old comps still work, however, and through them we can access the records of the totality concept as a whole, and not just our own role as weapons R&D. And so it was of some interest to me to find out that you were Dr. Theophilus Tanner. The name seemed to me to be familiar. My father, the gen before me, had an old family tale about my ancestor, who was involved with another branch of totality, a thing called Operation Kronos. Is that familiar, Doctor?
Of course it is. You know about the madness that lay at the root of it. The way in which I was dragged away from my beloved Emily and my children, and how I was flung forward into the chaos and evil that stalks the Deathlands.
Wallace studied the papers in front of him in an off-handed manner, seeming not to notice the hysterical pitch creeping into Doc's voice.
As a matter of fact, the last reference to you just states that you were projected into the future. Did you know that you were the only success? Quite remarkable.
There are other words for it.
I'm not really interested in your opinions, only your survival.
It just so happens that a vital component in one of our machines has broken down for the last time. There are no repairs that can be made to it, so we need a replacement part. You can be of some use to us.
I? How can I be of use? An old man, out of time, prone to fits of melancholy and madness? What do I know of machines?
Perhaps more than you know. As soon as you and your companions arrived, I knew you would be of some use. Your great age brings the necessary wisdom. The fact that you are who you are is an unexpected bonus. For that reason, you will live. If you agree to help, then your companions will also live. If not, well...
Oh, you hardly give me a choice. So be it.
Good. I will get Sarge Murphy and his guard to escort you back to your companions until we're ready. Sarge Murphy!
As the Gen bellowed Murphy's name and the Chief Secman opened the door, Duck wondered what horrors awaited him.
Stoop, move. Never give anything.
Uh-huh.
Jack's sharp opinion was echoed by Dean, who shook his head when Doc, safely returned to the dormitory by Murphy, told them of the outcome of his interview with Wallace. It amused Doc that Murphy, obviously still remembering Panner's fate, had kept his blaster trained on him from 5 yards distance, not allowing the old man any scope for an attempted assault.
I disagree. The crazy old buzzard has done nothing more than buy us time, but at least he's done that.
My dear Mildred, I shall accept that with the graciousness that you no doubt intended.
You're both right. It was stupid in some ways, but what else could Doc do? What we need now is to work out how we get out of here.
The one-eyed warrior surveyed his friends. His biggest concern was the lasting effects of the psychological weapons they had endured. Physically, they weren't in too bad shape. His ball still hurt like hell, but the rest of his wounds were nothing more than abrasions and bruising. Running and fighting would make his balls feel like they were about to fall off, but he could stand that if it was a choice between resting them and being chilled. JB and Mildred were in a similar condition. Minor abrasions, nothing more. When Ryan mentioned his own injuries, JB winced, so he too may be slowed by the injuries inflicted by the cane seat. They would have to take that into account. It could make the split-second difference between escape and buying the farm. Dean had been left more or less alone. His reward for telling Murphy who he was, Ryan figured. Doc was okay. That was a weird one. What did these cold hearts have in mind for him? Old tech could mean anything, if it was still working. Ryan looked across the room at Christy, who was lying on a bed, trying to get some sleep. She was bruised and had a split lip where Murphy had whipped her with that ring hand he loved to use. Ryan idly wondered if he would have an opportunity to cut it off and ram it up the sick man's ass before they left. It was only a passing thought. Revenge was a luxury they couldn't afford. It was Jack who worried Ryan most. He was a born fighter, with reserves of stamina and strength that belied his slender frame. But Murphy had enjoyed working on Jack. His face was marked with new scars and scabs, his lips swollen, and one eye totally obscured where the flesh had puffed and discolored. His body had mostly been left alone, but he too had been tortured on the cane chair, and at one point he remembered being cut loose and kicked across the floor of the interrogation cell. Mildred had examined him and had found no evidence of broken bones, but she was concerned that he might have a hairline fracture of at least one rib that could cause problems. Jack caught Ryan's stare with his one good eye. He seemed to know what Ryan was thinking.
We break? Leave me if slow us up.
You know better than that, Jack.
It was what any of them would have said under the circumstance, but he'd be damned if he'd do it. Ryan sank back on his bed. Now to wait. It was Wallace's move. It was hard to know how much time had passed. No one had a wrist cron, as they'd all been taken away, and the seconds dragged. JB in particular found his fingers itching without blasters to strip and clean, ammo to indent, and grins to check. Jack was lost without his leaf-bladed knives to clean and practice throwing. The only members of the party who seemed not to notice the time passing were Mildred and Doc, both of whom were lost in their own thoughts. Mildred was still trying to exorcise the ghost of the clan that now haunted her dreams, while Doc was lost in some reverie of jumbled memories, the labyrinthine twists of which only he could follow. Ryan mentally ran through methods of escape. Every scenario he could imagine was played out in his mind, trying to weigh the odds and take into account their debilitated physical condition and lack of weapons. Each time he came up with the same observation. Things were going to be tough, and chance would play a big factor in their success or failure. Ryan had been a fighting man long enough to know how big a role chance could play for either side. If only he could think of a way to shorten those odds in his favor. His train of thought was cut short by Dean's sudden complaint.
Damn, I'm hungry.
I guess it is some time since they last fed us. Time does fly when you're having fun, doesn't it?
Guess Dean's just a growing boy.
Oh, Dad.
Ah, but you must feed the inner child. After all, the child...
Doc's comment was to be forever lost, as he was interrupted by the click of the lock, and the door swung open. Murphy was standing in the doorway, a small blaster in his left fist. J.B. noted that it was a 9mm Beretta, and was blue rather than matte black. Not standard army issue. Most likely an heirloom handed down Murphy's family line. It looked pristine. Murphy may be a bastard, but J.B. couldn't help admiring the care he took of his blaster. It was something the sergeant had to have imparted to the SecMen under him, as the two soldiers flanking the man also had blasters that looked to be in pristine condition. Whereas the SecMen they had previously encountered had been armed with 9mm Heckler & Koch MP5K blasters, these SecMen had Uzis. The H&K was a handier blaster, more compact, but J.B. had a soft spot for the Uzi. Always reliable, and quite deadly at short range. Especially if well maintained. And these blasters were gleaming. If the rest of the armory was this well maintained, then J.B. would have given anything to see it. Murphy, surveying the room, had noticed J.B.
Mr. Dix, I must apologize for the manner in which you were questioned earlier. In war there is no time for niceties, and we've been at war for a long time now. I have to say, boy, that you are a man after my own heart. You care about your weaponry, and realize that the key to any effective defense is the maintenance of a good armory. I salute you, sir.